Let me first begin by thanking the organizers for inviting me and for organizing this very nice workshop. So Didier was talking mostly about model wave function, that we kind of have some ansatz for wave function, and then we can extract information about the topological properties, etc. Here I want to talk how we can start from some model Hamiltonian, and then with the help of DMRG to first find the ground state, and then use this ground state to again extract information about both the kind of a symmetry protected topological order and intrinsic topological order. And because of the lack of time, I'm gonna mostly show rather conceptual ideas, but I think there's a lot of time to discuss here. So let me just first start by giving the main idea that we are following here. So we want to describe an infinite system, and to start with, let us just think of a one-dimensional infinite system. And we express the wave function, or we want to express our ground state wave function in this form. And again, this is very similar to what Didier showed before, but it's a simpler version of it, right? So we just have a one-dimensional system that's infinitely extended in this direction, and we just express the amplitudes in the many-body wave function in the form of a product of these matrices, or this ring three tensors, right? So after, if we multiply all those tensors here, we will get the amplitudes of the many-body wave function. And what I want to assume here is that we have a certain translational invariance. So we can construct the state by just putting the same matrix over and over again. Good. And in principle, this ansatz can describe every wave function that has a translational invariance. However, generically, if I write down a generic state, the bond dimension, or the indices that I need here, have to go over exponentially many indices, so they're going to be very large. So we don't win anything from this. However, we know that if we don't want to describe random states in Hilbert space, but we want to describe ground states of local Hamiltonians, or in particular ground state of gapped local Hamiltonians, we actually know that the ground states will fulfill the area law. And these area law states, they are very special, and they can be expressed very efficiently using this ansatz. So this ansatz is particularly optimized to describe these type of states. And if we then express our state using this formalism, we can then actually reduce the number of parameters that we need to describe the wave function from something that's huge, like d being the internal dimension, so which, for example, is 2 for a spin 1/2 system, to the power of infinity, to some number which is d times chi squared, and chi, this is the bond dimension of the matrices that we need to express the state. And this can generically be chosen relatively small. So with this, we have now some ansatz where we believe it can express the states that we're interested in, namely the ground states of local Hamiltonians. And the next question is, how can we actually optimize it? Because we want to start from a Hamiltonian, and we want to find now the ground state expressed in this form. And the way that we are doing this is using DMRG. And here I just want to give, again, more conceptually the idea what exactly we're going to do. We can actually use a very similar framework that we have for the matrix product states for operators, right? So and basically what we do, we just, again, have some tensors that we just multiply, but instead of having one leg sticking out here, we actually have another one sticking out up here, so we have two legs. And once we multiply all these tensors together, we actually have the operator. So we can do this for our Hamiltonian. And then we can just sandwich it between two of these states, and then this is the picture that we get. And this is basically the energy of our state. Okay? So now we actually have an expression for the energy for our guess that we had for those matrices. And now what we can do is we can now iteratively optimize it. We can say that let us just take out one matrix here and solve a linear optimization problem to find a better guess for this B, and then replace all of them by this B, and do this over and over again, and this will then eventually converge to a very good guess of the ground state. So with this, we have some efficient method to find the ground state representation for a given Hamiltonian in an infinite system But we, we did eventually find the MPS representation of the state. Good. And this, as I showed here, is optimized only for one-dimensional systems. However, we can use the same ideas also for two-dimensional systems. And we get something that's more efficient than what we would naively do with DMRG, say. Because if we have a system where they have the linear dimension of Lx and Ly, then the numerical effort that we would need to exactly diagonalize the many-body Hamiltonian would scale exponentially with Lx times Ly. In the DMRG approach to this problem, what we would do is we just enumerate the sites that we have, for example, like shown here, a snake going through the system. And by this, we effectively map our two-dimensional system to a one-dimensional system. However, the price that we have to pay is that even though we start from a Hamiltonian that has only short-range interactions, like only actions, interactions, say, between nearest neighbors, in this one-dimensional formulation, we get long-range interactions, which will make life much harder. So what we get then in terms of the scaling of the complexity is that we have something that scales linear with the extent in one direction, say the direction here in y, and exponential in the width of our system. And if we use this infinite system, so basically if we are simulating the system on an infinitely extended cylinder, then we just can save this extra factor of Ly, and we just have something that scales only with e to the Lx. And this is exactly the approach that we want to use for several of the problems. And one thing that I find quite interesting, I mean, even though we know conceptually the way to go would be to use the PEPS description that we heard before, at this moment still the technology is so much better for these one-dimensional systems that these not optimal kind of quasi one-dimensional description of two-dimensional systems at the moment still the best we can do to simulate two-dimensional systems, starting from a Hamiltonian.
Why is it still technically
better than DMRG? Well, I mean, here for DMRG, we know exactly how we can, for example, find a canonical form that makes the algorithm very stable, and we don't have this really for two-dimensional systems. So if you want to, if you just write down a PEPS ansatz and you try to optimize it, it's just much harder. The algorithms are less stable. And just in terms of numbers, when I mentioned the relevant parameters is how big we choose these bond dimensions. For DMRG, we can choose bond dimensions which are maybe 20, 30,000. For PEPS, it's maybe 8 or 10. So the bond dimension is really much smaller that we can.
But you cannot compare this way. You have to compare chi multiplied by the next dimension.
Right, that we have the exponential one of them. But that even then, yeah. But just if you just look at the results, eventually the DMRG seems to be. So I think there's lots of interesting work to do to actually optimize the PEPS to get it eventually.
Many people do DMRG as opposed to IDMRG then? Or see, there must be some advantages for DMRG too, right?
Well, if you do DMRG, I mean, you can do maybe finite size scaling in the y direction too. Honestly, I don't know. I mean, for most of the problems that I worked on so far, I always felt that this IDMRG was doing a better job on finding.
Well, I mean, if you know ahead of time that you have a gap, that's probably correct.
Right. Yeah. If you have a gapless system, and then you have to. I mean, the idea is that even if you simulate an infinite system, you can do some sort of a finite entanglement scaling to still do scaling analysis of critical systems, but that might be in some cases less reliable. But I think for gap systems, I would probably most of the time just choose this infinite system DMRG.
Right. I think there's some conceptual question when you do that in the sense that you know, what does it mean to simulate an infinite system? Say you look at the energy to try and judge how well you're doing. You're trying to get an energy per site in an infinite system. And you get that as good as you can. But
right.
Even if you have a very small error in the energy per site, per unit length, you know, that's an infinite error in the total ground state energy. So one doesn't really know that you're close to the ground state in that sense. There's some assumption that you're looking at the right class of wave functions.
Well, I mean, of course, I mean, it could be, but that that if you say that you have a critical system, but for some reason you miss, I mean, there are traps you can fall into. But
you get the energy density as accurate as you want, but you don't get the energy as accurate as you want. Whereas for a finite system like DMRG, you get the energy as accurate as you want, and then eventually you know that you're actually in the ground state. So that's a...
Yeah, but even like for a finite system, one can... If the bond dimension would be chosen too small, then one is also in...
Oh, sure, but...
Yeah.
But I think the point Leon is making is that, in principle, if you take the bond dimension arbitrarily large in the DMRG, then you'll get... You know that you will really go to the exact state.
Mm-hmm.
But for the infinite one, you will never know it.
Yeah,
exactly. The obvious physical way that can happen is if you have broken translational symmetry. But aside from broken translational symmetry, I know this can happen in principle, but I don't know of any case where it actually does happen. Is there one? Where IDMRG identifies just the wrong state. Aside from a case where obviously if translation symmetry is broken, that might happen.
If there's incommensurate order, like if it wants to form a density wave that's incommensurate to what you're specifying IDMRG, that's...
But that might also happen if you have a finite cluster, if you have a finite system size and the order doesn't fit in. I mean, there are many problems. I agree with that, but I think if you work it out carefully, I generally think that it...
I'm not critiquing it, rather just to say, I mean, I think it's a little delicate to work with infinite wave functions numerically. You don't really have variational principles to rely on in that same sense that you do for a finite system.
Right.
So, for example, you can construct, examples where you write an infinite wave function which is in the wrong phase, it has the wrong long distance properties, but its energy per site are arbitrarily close to the ground state energy.
I agree that there can be problems, but for practical purposes, it seems to work most of the time.
How do you know that such a state wouldn't be found in a finite system? I mean, we don't have any proof that DMRG is going to not wind up in that state as well, do we?
Well, you know that, I think you know for DMRG that if you go long enough with enough increases in bond dimension,
but that might be
arbitrarily close to the exact ground state energy, not the energy density. And then, that's what at the ground state is.
Even if the ground state is a metal, what if it's a metal?
For a finite system.
Yeah, I know. So I think the answer is yes, I believe.
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But for IDMRG, it's definitely.
It's hard,
metal.
Of course. So you can DMRG to study one-dimensional metals on strips that are not too wide.
The finite cylinder might also give you the wrong phase as well. If your first order transition just surface effects will...
Oh, yeah. You get the 1D thing.
I think both methods have some shortcomings, but we better be careful. So, okay. But let me now try to... So say that we assume that we found now the right ground state of our system, and now I want to just discuss for the last few minutes how we can then use the infinite matrix product state and extract a number of kind of characterizing properties from it, characterizing both symmetry protected phases, which I want to discuss first, and then talk a little bit about intrinsic topological order that we can find in fraction quantum Hall states. So let me first talk about 1D symmetry protected topological phases. So, and I have one slide where I just want to give the main idea and just tell you what we are looking for. So let us assume that we have a Hamiltonian and a gapped ground state. We assume that both of them are symmetric under certain symmetry operations that are like some symmetry group G. And here I just want to assume that the symmetry operation acts on the state in the following way. We just have a tensor product of symmetry operators where they just act on the site. So this could, for example, be a spin rotation. And furthermore, I assume that the representation of this symmetry group in terms of the local degrees of freedom is a linear representation. So the multiplication of the group elements or of the representations is the same as the multiplication of the group elements. Good. And if we have now a finite slab, or we just have a finite system, then we find that given that there are certain degeneracies, that the symmetry operation can fractionalize. Right? So we have to basically take our system, we act on this the state here with a symmetry operation. We know in the bulk it's invariant, so it wouldn't change it. However, it can change the boundaries. And since the action on these boundaries is only defined up to some phase factor, it can generate, in principle, projective representation of the symmetry group. So projective symmetry, a projective representation is just a regular representation modulo some U1 phase factor here. Good. And for this projective representation, there's a relatively old question. So if I just take a group and I just find two different sets of consistent phases that I can introduce, are those actually the same projective representation? Or in other words, can I actually just locally kind of regauge the elements of these U's to just go from one to the other one? And the way that we can classify these projective representation is in terms of the Schur multipliers or the second cohomology group H2 over GU1. So basically this tells us if we have two projective representation, whether we can just transform one to the other by just rephasing each of those U matrices. And then we can just adopt the same ideas to classify different kind of symmetry protected phases by just basically checking what kind of projective representation do the operators belong to that transform the edges of the system. And it was then shown that this kind of classification is actually a complete classification of 1D phases, though I put it some quotation marks because there are also some exceptions to this still. Let me now come to the following question. So let us say that we have a Hamiltonian for which we found...
Yes? Is there any reason not to let the on-site symmetry projective team?
Well, if we would have the on-site symmetry, if we have like an on-site symmetry that is projective, then we would have some sort of Diebold-Matthes theorem. Then we would probably find a gapless state. And then we could have some SBT phase where we just break the symmetry, but then we have a... Well, then we would have a linear representation with respect to the unit cell. And if we have, actually one thing that we discussed recently in one paper that we put on the archive was, which is published by now, is that if we actually allow for mixing of the representation, for example, if you take if you take a Hubbard ladder where you allow for charge fluctuations, you can actually show that then there's some adiabatic way to connect what used to be an SPT phase with a trivial phase without breaking the symmetry. But then this notion is no longer well defined. So I want to assume at this point that we have a linear on-site representation. Good. But let us now assume that we have a system where all this is fulfilled and we find the ground state in terms of an MPS. How can we extract this information from our simulation? And I want to show or advocate that we can use the Schmidt decomposition to do this very nicely. So let us assume that we have an infinite system. And in an infinite system, we don't have any edges that we could look at least no physical edges. So what we're going to do is we take our state and we do a Schmidt decomposition. So we just rewrite our state as a superposition of product states with respect to this partition. So. And so basically, we just think of the system as two big spins, where like one big spin is describing the left, and the one big spin is describing the right, and we're just looking at the states of the spins. And this process will generate sort of artificial edges in the system. Right? So we have just here, if you just look maybe at the Schmidt state describing the right, then we have here some edges. And the main idea is now the following. We just take our symmetry operation acting on our state, and we act on it only on, say, the right Schmidt states, and then we can just form a representation of the symmetry operation in terms of the Schmidt states. And since this involves exactly the edge degrees of freedom, this is actually giving us immediately these matrices U. So this tells us exactly how these edges are transforming. So this gives us a way how we can, starting from an infinite wave function, extract information about how edges transform under symmetry operations. And this was just a conceptual idea. In practice, how can we do this for the MPS representation? And again, let me just draw the same picture. But now I just stop at one index here. I can always choose my MPS in the form, in the so-called canonical form, such that this index here that I can keep fixed corresponds exactly to one of these Schmidt states. Then multiplying the remaining matrices gives us exactly all the Schmidt states for a bipartition of the system at this particular bond. So then I can just apply the symmetry operation to the MPS, which looks like this. So I just multiply to each physical index the symmetry operation, and then calculate the overlap. So I have now the conjugate of the MPS that I multiply here. And this is now exactly the matrix UG of gamma and gamma prime. But if we just look at this expression, we are just multiplying again and again the transfer matrix. So all that will be left is the dominant eigenvector of the transfer matrix. So what we find then from this is that if we have our infinite MPS, what we need to do to extract the projective representations is just to construct this so-called generalized or mixed transfer matrix where we just sandwich the symmetry operator and find the dominant eigenvector of this. And this gives us this matrix UG. And once for all group elements we have the projective representation, we can then extract the factor set or calculate some gauge invariant factors which tell us what kind of phase we are in. And just to demonstrate this idea, I use here the spin 1 Haldane chain, or like the spin 1 Heisenberg chain with a single ion anisotropy. And if D is equals to 0, then we are in this is just the spin 1 Heisenberg chain, so this is in the Haldane phase, which is in a SPT phase. And then if we make D relatively large, at some point we will have a transition into some trivial phase, which in the limit of D going to infinity will be just a state with is just a product state of SC equals to 0 eigenstates. So, and just by calculating this kind of quantity, which we obtain by diagonalizing the transfer matrix, we can just exactly, this is a nice way to pinpoint the transition. So this can be done for all kinds of symmetries, or basically for every symmetry that can give us some SPT phase, we can extract these phase factors. Good. And so that also works for inversion symmetry or for time reversal symmetry for whatever we can think of. So this was how we can use this idea for one-dimensional system, but the same applies also to two-dimensional systems where we can have so-called symmetry-enriched topological phases. And these symmetry-enriched phases, I don't want to talk about in detail about this, but one of the kind of symmetry-enriched topological phases would be phases where the anions in a given topologically ordered phase transform projectively under some symmetries. And one of the examples is the RVB state that Didier talked about. So what we can do is we can take these four minimally entangled states, construct them a similar way as Didier did it, and just act on those states with the symmetry operations, and by this check how do the anions transform under symmetry. For the RVB state, the spinons are spin 1 halves, so they transform projectively, so we get a minus 1 for the spinon and for the bound pair of a spinon and a magnetic flux particle. So we can just use these ideas also to characterize these SET phases. And there was a nice paper recently by Mike Zalettl, who also showed that the same can be applied for space group symmetries in these systems. Good. I think I'm running out of time a little bit. But let me just talk a bit about some recent work we did on quantum Hall. So,
can I
yes?
Ask a question about this failure? So for this, you actually did calculation using IDMRG.
At this point, these results are actually also done using 2D tensor networks. So in this way, this is a bit of cheating because I'm not using model Hamiltonian here right now, because I'm here using also a state.
If you have tensor network state, you can apply this symmetry.
Exactly, you can just apply it the same.
Apply and then evaluate matrix element of global unitary global symmetry transformation.
Right. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, this works both for 2D tensor networks and for MPS. Good. Yeah, let me now very briefly talk about some ideas how we can use these IDMRG method to study fractional quantum Hall systems. And here I mainly show some results that Mike and Roger recently obtained. So let us now discuss very briefly about the ideas of quantum Hall. So we take our cylinder, and we have now a two-dimensional electron gas on the cylinder, and we have a magnetic field applied perpendicular to the surface of our cylinder. And the idea is now the following. We first can solve the non-interacting system choosing a Landau gauge and find the and construct the non-interacting kind of generate orbitals in the first Landau level. And what we find is that these wave functions or the orbitals are localized along the y direction. So what we can do now is we can just take the base or construct basically many body bases from these non-interacting states, which are localized on the cylinder along the what I call here the y direction, and this gives us now effectively a mapping of the kind of two-dimensional system on a cylinder to a kind of a one-dimensional or quasi-one-dimensional system. And in the limit of a very thin cylinder, this is actually becoming a real one-dimensional system. However, as we make the cylinder wider, the wave function overlap is getting bigger and bigger. So effectively, the system will just get longer and longer range interactions. And then we can just write down the wave function in terms of this kind of orbital basis. These are operators that are creating fermions in particular kind of these localized orbitals. And we can evaluate the matrix elements for the Hamiltonian. And the price that we have to pay for this mapping is that the larger we make the cylinder, the longer range the interactions get. And then the DMRG algorithm will be getting more and more difficult as we make this cylinder wider. Let me just show some results. And the most recent results we obtained for this are for the 12/5 state, where this is a question if the read reside state is here the ground state. And here I just want to flash through some of the results. So assuming a particular kind of a level, a particular layer thickness, we actually get these kind of entanglement spectra. I mean, these are similar entanglement spectra to what Didier showed. And here we can identify the counting that is specific for the Z3 parafermionic state, which shows that at least for these simulations, we find that there's actually a read-resi type of state. And one thing that we can do beyond just plotting the entanglement spectra is to calculate the momentum polarization. And here the ideas are somewhat similar to what I showed before. We again do transformations on the Schmidt states, but here we calculate basically the Berry phase for twisting the states. And from this, we can extract quantities such as the topological spin and the chiral central charge, which agree roughly with what we would expect for the read-resi state. And lastly, I want to just show some colorful picture, because one of the neat things what we can do with this infinite DMRG is to say that we find ground states corresponding to different anion types, so like different minimally entangled states, and we can merge them together. And then we just know, so just not talking about quantum Hall, if we just think about a system where we have, for example, some charge density wave order, we can just take two states having two different kinds of charge density order. If we put them together, then we know that there has to be one kink in between. We can do the same with a fractional quantum Hall wave function, and by this generate anions, and then just look at here, for example, the charge density distribution of a Fibonacci anion here. Okay, so with this, I want to conclude.
Questions for Frank?
So going back to the symmetry stuff, you said that you mentioned that you could do things like inversion, which were not on-site symmetry.
What you mean?
Or maybe I misunderstood, but it sounds like you were saying that this this business of kind of detecting projective symmetry of gravitations, that you can also do this for
inversion
symmetry.
Yeah. So you can, for example, for inversion symmetry, like if you act with inversion on an MPS, it's basically just taking the transpose of the matrices. So then the kind of mixed transfer matrix that you would look at is that you have the transverse of the B matrix with B. And then you diagonalize it, and then you can you find a matrix that's either symmetric or anti-symmetric for the two different phases that you can have.
So if you have two of these taus going near each other, but not quite, so is there a favored channel?
Well, you can just look at the different channels.
Yeah, so just like let them separate a little bit, maybe a little bit of overlap. So is there do you have any idea like what's the natural coupling between them and what's the favored channel?
I didn't do this. Did you play this?
The answer is no.
No. Okay.
We don't know.
Yes.
So this quantum hole and 2D lattice models are very different, so maybe not easy to compare. But so what I kind of understood from your explanation is that so both are essentially 2D. So you have essentially same difficulty in DMRG. Just if you somehow use 1D algorithms, then get longer range interactions.
Right, yeah, that happens in both cases.
The
yeah.
way this long range interaction is introduced is kind of different in a lattice model, you use this snake, then
right.
Long range interaction kind of more artificial.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in this 1D mapping of quantum hole, it's kind of more natural, although if you make circumference larger, then you have longer and longer range interaction. So essentially you have same difficulty, but somehow I feel this quantum hole problem matches this 1D algorithm somehow better. Do you have the same feeling
I think it's hard to tell. I mean, these quantum hole states, they behave quite nicely because even though they have this this 2D area law, the coefficient is relatively small. So we can go to comparably large systems. While the prefactor is much larger for some of the 2D lattice systems, so the scaling is the same.
Hey, let's thank Frank and Didier again.